Welcome to Fan Pregame, brought to you by Betano. The game starts now. We've got an hour show for you. Frank Cervelli in a moment. Rich Peverly to help us tee up Leafs and Stars, which we'll have on Molson Leafs Hockey at 6:30. We'll look into that matchup tonight, which we have on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, a couple hockey games on the network as well. Tampa and Boston on Sportsnet 1. Calgary, St. Louis, Sportsnet West. And the return of TGL, including Tiger Woods, makes its a return to the airwaves and TV tonight on Sportsnet East.
And I saw visual evidence of him walking in with the backwards hat, which usually means that he means business. So, yeah, I'm a little fired up to watch
that's
Tiger
your team.
Tonight. It's one of my teams.
Yeah.
I'm 1-0 so far.
It's going to be good. It's LA versus Jupiter Lynx. And we'll get to all of that and more and look at tonight's action. But let's bring in Frank Cervelli, president of content at Daily Faceoff. Frank, how are you and your Eagles doing?
pretty good. I mean, feeling good about the Rams after they played really well in LA earlier this season. So I don't mind this matchup.
Okay.
I don't like it as much as you do, but maybe we can address that after the fact. Okay. So I think it's officially trade season, Frank, because we got two major articles from you at dailyfaceoff.com. And we got Tampa and Boston on the network. And it's interesting because you had Boston at least among the most ambitious teams in terms of need and potential want and ambition. Like, what is that for you? Because the Bruins are not having a good season. I think there's probably a pretty hard ceiling on what they can accomplish this year. So is this irrational or opportunistic, the Bruins' search, in your mind, for a true number one center?
So it's not irrational or opportunistic. What I would say is it's actually logical, because think about the assets that they've committed to this season. Think about the pieces that they brought in over the summer and the money that they spent on Elias Lindholm and Nikita Zadorov. And then think about the season that they're getting from Brad Marchand at age 36. They're not really able to turn the page and go in the other direction anytime soon. So the thought process here would be, this is a really difficult deal to make, but if you can boost your team down the middle in a meaningful way, how much would that change the dynamic of your season and what you'd be able to accomplish? Because I still think with the back end that Boston has, if they can get any significant uptick in the goaltending from Jeremy Swayman, whose numbers you would think would rebound at some point, although he clearly seems to still be struggling from whatever happened in the offseason and ultimately getting that contract, that I think this Bruins team and the complexion surrounding it could change pretty drastically.
So whether or not they get a number one center is not going to really change plans. It would just be, okay, we're going to try to get one over the summer months, I imagine. But could things turn for the Bruins in looking at their timeline? Brad Marchand still is without a contract. Is there anything new on that front?
Don't believe anything's new. I think they've continued to talk, and by all accounts, I think things have remained pretty amicable. So really no significant concern. And you look at his play this year, even with the surgeries that he had in the offseason, the trifecta of surgeries, his play hasn't dipped. And in fact, when I was crunching some numbers for midseason Selke voting, I know it sounds maybe a little bit funny to say, but Brad Marchand was a guy that appeared on my list somewhere. He didn't get a vote from me, but he was a name that I had to at least think about and do some due diligence on, because he's had a really special year for a guy that also started slow.
I like to picture you crunching numbers. Don't know what that looks like, but just big calculator.
Just like smoke coming out of my ears. Yeah, not good.
It's good. That's why I don't crunch any numbers. We mentioned it, you've got two great articles up at Daily Faceoff, kind of breaking down the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference. It made it very easy for me because you've got buyers, sellers, and then you have some fun tiers like it's complicated, or for the love of God, or for tire kicking. But I like that it's complicated, because I think that's where I'm most interested over the next 8 weeks as we approach it, because you got some teams that maybe didn't know they would be in this spot, like a Columbus, like a Montreal, the New York Rangers, the Flyers, and the Penguins, at least in the Eastern Conference. When you look at those, like, what is the complication in terms of 8 weeks? Is it, okay, we're going to be really good here, we're going to be really bad, we're going to be in that mushy middle and try to figure out, like, who we are?
Well, it kind of harkens back to, like, back in the day, 5, 8, 10 years ago. Remember the relationship status? It was like, yes. What are we? It's complicated. Yes. That's what it is. And I think for a lot of these teams, their relationship with this season is complicated, and for all sorts of different reasons, depending on the market. Like Columbus, by no means, I think, was expecting to be in this spot at this time. They've vastly exceeded expectations, but that also doesn't mean you go out there and you throw caution to the wind and start trading future assets away to help this team be a playoff team and get in this year just for the sake of it. You know, I think the Flyers, they're in a different spot. They've got to figure out who the core pieces of this team are going to be moving forward, who really wants to be a Flyer, because I watch that team on a night-to-night basis and I hear the chatter behind the scenes, and I think there's like 3 to 5 players who are absolutely miserable and could use a change of scenery. You've got the Pittsburgh Penguins. They're run right now, just enjoy the ride. Like, you don't have much that you could sell off to create real value for your team for the future, and you've already committed so much to the current team and this core. Like, why not just sit back and say, hey, whatever happens from here on in, we're not going to help, we're not going to hurt, but we're just there. So there's all sorts of different reasons why each team ended up in this spot, but here's one overarching theme that I think you can apply to the entire Eastern Conference, which is, outside of the New York Islanders, I'm not comfortable putting any one team in pure sell mode. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason for that is, let's say you're the Sabres and you're carrying up the rear of the Eastern Conference. You're not trading pieces from your team for future assets. No, if you're trading, it's to make your team better for the here and now, to change the look and complexion of it. So that part, this is a very non-traditional deadline when it comes to looking at the Eastern Conference. And I don't really know how much is going to change, because you look at the Wings and the Canadiens and other teams that have had their fortunes change over the last 2 to 3 weeks. All it takes is 2 good weeks for your team to be in a playoff spot.
Unlike Ailish, I'll crunch the odd number. And I was doing so looking at Dustin Wolf earlier. The Flames are on Sportsnet West tonight, visiting the St. Louis Blues. Dustin Wolf not expected to start, I don't think. But just looking at his numbers, he's among the league's best in terms of the advanced data that I was crunching a little bit earlier. And that leads me to the Calder race. And we've talked a little bit about the Calder race before with you, and Dustin Wolf with you before, as it pertains to the Calder race. I just look at it being like, okay, if he's going to finish top 10 in terms of goaltending this season, and we get a ho-hum Calder offering from the best forward or defenseman in this year's class, like, if it looks like Matty Beniers S 60 points and Dustin Wolf is a top 10 goaltender this year, isn't the decision for the Calder pretty easy then?
It could be. And I think the door is wide open for Dustin Wolf to come in and kick it down. I'll boil it down into the most simple route possible, which is the Calgary Flames make the playoffs on Dustin Wolf's back, and he's winning the Calder, much like Steve Mason did with the Columbus Blue Jackets in 2009. The numbers for Wolf have been fantastic, and he's the biggest change for me in his Calder candidacy is that he's taken the reins in Calgary's crease by pure meritocracy and hasn't relinquished it. He started the last 3 games, 4 of 5, 6 of 8, and 8 of 11. I know they said there would be no number crunching, but heading into last night's game, 6-1-1 in his last 8, and in his last 5 games, a .940 save percentage. Like, the math is very impressive. And I think it does a few things for the Calgary Flames. One, not only gives them a shot at the playoffs, 2, creates a real conversation about, if Dustin Wolf is for real, what does this timeline look for the build that Craig Conroy has embarked on? And I'm going to give you a wild card 3rd option here when looking at this season for Dustin Wolf. What if his numbers stay in this realm and the Flames make the playoffs? He's going to be getting Vezina votes.
Yeah, he is definitely flirting with it. Like, the numbers compare to the Vezina guys. There's going to be one Vezina winner, obviously, in Connor Hellebuck, given where he's at. But, you know, Dustin Wolf compares pretty well to pretty much anyone else.
If we're talking about youth, I'm going to go over to the Chicago Blackhawks, because Connor Bedard gets 100 points, and he's the fastest teenager to reach 100 points since Sidney Crosby, and has beaten the 100-point race for people such as Nathan MacKinnon and Jack Hughes, tied Austin Matthews 112 games. But the post game was very sad to watch. Obviously, team success is most important, but there's not a lot of that going around. I wonder at what point Well, I know in your article you have Chicago as sellers, but I just wonder what the pathway is for them moving forward, because they feel a lot further than where they should be. They have someone in Connor Bedard who's doing great things, but they're not finding team success. They might win another draft lottery, I guess, but it just feels really sad around Chicago. When you watch Connor Bedard and his post-game remarks, what do you make of all of this?
Well, he's a guy that wears a lot of it, and I love his compete level because he wants to have this team win and wants to lead them to success. But I think he's realized and or come to grips with the idea that you can't do it alone. And I think part of the reason things feel so sad in Chicago, if that's the term you used, I don't think it's wrong, that a lot of what's happening with the Blackhawks, you can't see. Like, Sam Renzel is in Minnesota, and I think he could be as good as Brock Faber. And you're not getting a taste of that if you're a Blackhawks fan right now. And then you've got Artem Levchunov, who's their number two overall pick from last year. He's in the AHL, and he's not putting up gaudy numbers on the blue line, but you watch his game, and you see the confidence that's developing for him, and you get really excited about it. And you see Alex Vlasic currently on the back end. And things are coming together. It's just not all happening at the NHL level, which makes this whole thing just a little bit more abstract. So help is on the way. I can promise him that. And when it comes to the Blackhawks and their deadline plans, their objective for me was to sell judiciously. And the point behind that is because they've struggled so much this year, you can't continue to just strip off pieces just for the fun of it. Mm-hmm. You need to find some balance with that and give this team some proper support, which, to be fair, Kyle Davidson tried to do in the summer with the money that he spent on limited term deals to prop up this team in the meantime until some of those reinforcements come in. But whether it's, you know, the simple Taylor Hall retain salary transaction to get him somewhere and find some value, or whether it's something a little bit more complicated involving like a Connor Murphy, or if you were to package Connor Murphy and a Jason Dickinson up front, or someone like a Ryan Donato, they've got options to try and create that value. And then you wanted to spin it forward to the draft, and they are going to get a good pick. They're probably almost guaranteed to pick in the top three or so. And they just wrapped their amateur scouting meetings last week. And part of the excitement that comes away from something like that is when you look at this 2025 draft class, there isn't a consensus number one pick. Mm-hmm. So when there's not a consensus number one pick, whether you win the lottery or whether you're picking three, that you're going to go into it knowing that the guy that we have that's number one on our list, he might be available to us at number three, because beauty's in the eye of the beholder. So things aren't all bad for the Hawks. I know, I understand the frustration that exists there. It's just that if you just go watch a Minnesota game and see Sam Renzel play, things kind of change your perspective a little bit.
We are chatting with Frank Saravalli of dailyfaceoff.com. More likely to impact a playoff team this year, Frank, Tony DeAngelo or John Klingberg?
I think I'm going to take the field on that one. Tony DeAngelo is supposed to be due back stateside on Wednesday. He is dealing with a family issue that necessitated his return. I do think ultimately it is a possibility that, you know, if there's an NHL team or something, an opportunity presents itself, would he consider it? Yeah, I think that's probably a fair assumption to make at this point in time. I have a lot more questions. And look, we just saw Tony DeAngelo and the impact that he's made, not just from a points perspective, but the video is so clear cut in what we've seen from the KHL that he belongs to be an NHL defenseman. When it comes to Klingberg, that recovery is an arduous one coming off of the hip resurfacing surgery in 2023, not 2024, it was in 2023. So he's had a long road back. I think anytime teams can find a way to mine a player without giving up an asset and take a risk-free flyer on him, you're always going to see someone step up to do it, particularly someone in John Klingberg who 3-4 years ago was such a totally different player than he has been now. But even when John Klingberg was playing, watching him, whether it was, you know, the quick stop that he had in Minnesota or elsewhere, there was just a confidence thing that just seemed to be missing from his game that hopefully he's found again in order for him to be an impact player.
Yeah, I was surprised to see his name pop up today. I'm sure it reached your radar before mine or ours, but
Groundhog Day.
A little bit surprising to see. It's kind of the Klingberg Bowl tonight in Toronto with Dallas facing the Maple Leafs at Scotiabank Arena. I mean, Dallas is an interesting team. They've played the second most playoff games of the last 5 years, only behind Tampa, and the teams that are top five in that, they've all won the Cup except for the Dallas Stars over the last 5 years. When you look at their Stanley Cup possibilities this year, like, what's the biggest obstacle ahead of the Dallas Stars? What is preventing them from getting over that hump?
The right side of their blue line. I mean, it's not bad, but it's rough. It's not Stanley Cup caliber. And the good thing if you're Jim Nill is you've potentially got $9.5 million to spend from Tyler Seguin on the LTIR front, which would be really helpful and give you the ammo that you need. The tough part if you're Jim Nill is your scouting staff is so damn good that you hate giving up top picks to bring in these players, because every year it feels like, even in the later portion of the first round, you're mining an impact future piece, whether it's, you know, Logan Stankoven or Wyatt Johnson or whoever it is that pops up, that they're hitting more than they're not. And so there is a balancing act, I think, when, you know, you've got such a talented group like that that can pick players. That said, I don't think you can properly rule out the Stars at any point against any team in the Western Conference. You think about the gauntlet that they had to go through last year just to get to the West Final. Understandable at that point when injuries and probably the slugfest that they went through in the first two rounds caught up to him, which is why I don't really put a lot of stock into what we've seen from the Stars in the regular season. That's a veteran-laden team that, even with some younger players who have come up, they understand what it takes, and they are, I think, the NHL's current-day switch flippers in that they can find a way when it gets to the postseason to be ready.
Yeah, good litmus test for the Leafs tonight. Dallas Stars in town. We'll let you go, Frank. I know you got cheerleading practice to go to.
Hey, I'm just firing up the family Uber here.
There you go.
It's one thing
Frank,
after the
Frank,
other.
Frank.
Every single night, there's always somewhere to be.
There you go. Appreciate your time, Frank. We'll chat next week.
See you guys.
Frank Cervelli of Daily Faceoff.
Well, he mentioned the right side, and yeah, I'm sure they're chanting Frank to and from cheerleading practice.
Give me an F.
Yeah, exactly. the reason why the right side of the Dallas defense corps is in peril is because one, Chris Tanev moved on from the Dallas Stars and joined the Toronto Maple Leafs. So they went out and replaced that last year, and I don't think it cost them all that much. Remember, that was a time where the Calgary Flames weren't doing business with the Toronto Maple Leafs, or at least it didn't seem.
They weren't speaking.
So the price maybe wasn't what it could have been, but they'll be looking for the exact same thing this year, and I don't know if you're going to do better than Chris Tanev, so maybe they did miss out on a major opportunity last year.
A commonality, Luke Fox tweeted this a little earlier today, Jake Ottinger and Joseph Woll, obviously the starters tonight in net for the Maple Leafs. Luke Fox saying that they both went out to dinner together last night, Jake Ottinger and Joseph Woll, and they started talking about how much they love playing behind Chris Tanev. Quote, he's a goalie's dream.
He really is. Like, that's one thing that it's, yeah, like, we get
bond.
It. We don't get goaltenders much. Like, we don't know what you guys are thinking in general terms. But with that, when a guy lays out and blocks pretty much anything he can get near, you can see why it'd be a value to young goaltenders trying to make their mark in the NHL.
We're going to spend the next half hour talking about Leafs and Stars tonight. We've got that on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. As you mentioned, it's kind of the Klingberg Bowl, the Tanev Bowl, the Robertson Bowl. There's a lot of things up for grabs tonight.
Yeah, the Klingberg Bowl might get third billing in terms of bowls.
Third there. Lowest on the card, at
given
least
that he's,
tonight.
You know, not in the building.
That was surprising to me, though. I was like, wait, the same Klingberg that I remember once? Yes, he might be of interest to the Maple Leafs. But we talked about it briefly before we brought Frank on. TGL on Sportsnet tonight. That's at 7 o'clock. It's LA versus Jupiter Lynx. Sportsnet Ontario and East have that. And it was... So it debuted last week. We talked about it, of course.
Yep.
Killer ratings. Like, this was a must-see event. So looking forward to seeing how it is even more so tonight, because Tiger Woods, obviously, the headliner for Jupiter Lynx, Max Homa, Tom Kim, Kevin Kisner, that's your team versus my team, LA Golf Club, Colin Morikawa, Sahith Theegala, Justin Rose, and Tommy Fleetwood. And For some reason, I'm pretty heavy favorite, -163, but my team last week got absolutely smoked. So Tupper Links, Tiger Woods, +125, I think that's a pretty good bet.
Yeah, I think it probably is.
And they're trying to figure it out. You know?
I might be rolling with that. They're trying to figure out everything with this, obviously. Mm-hmm. And everyone was bellyaching, or a lot of people were bellyaching about, like, how could you not have Tiger Woods in the first ever TGL
match? Maybe this was strategic.
How could you not have Rory McIlroy? Like, it makes perfect sense now because it's about what you do for the encore, right? Like, everyone can kind of throw the party, but if the party's no good, no one's going to come the next time around. So you did good ratings the first time because, yeah, it's the first time you've ever seen it. People are interested. And now you follow that up with Tiger Woods. I think you're going to get a better draw this time because, well, it's Tiger Woods. So you could back it up with the most watchable golfer in history and try to do another ratings success. I think the TGL is probably a little smarter than everyone else complaining about Tiger not being in the first.
I'm excited just to see Tiger Woods not have to walk and to just hit bombs and play his game and not worry about his leg at all. I think he could really cook in the same league.
He could be, this could be his thing.
He could be, like, if you could do Conn Smythe Award early bet, of course it would be Tiger Woods because he can just, he just gets to stand in the same, you know, 20-foot radius and do what he does best.
TGL's got a Conn Smythe, eh?
We should figure out what that is.
They should figure that out. Maybe they do have that for future reference. Good. Are you one of the people then that want to see him in a golf cart?
Oh, Justin, I don't know.
I'm pro Tiger golf cart. I mean, he would never do it. He'd die before he would jump in the golf cart.
That's it. He would never want to take that advantage or that, not even advantage, just like the assistance.
And
he
ripped everyone else before for you or wanting to use a golf cart. So he could never. But I want to see him play the Masters until the end of time.
Yeah.
And if that requires a golf cart, like, give him the golf cart.
Oh, boy. All right. So TGL up on Sportsnet at 7 o'clock. Okay, so let's do some best bets for tonight that aren't related to TGL. Mine, however, is a little Bunkers Dogs of the Day, Toronto edition. Both Toronto hockey teams in action tonight, the Leafs and the Scepters, both dogs. And both in dire need of a win. So I'm going to parlay those up, and we're going to go Leafs and Scepters to win tonight. Scepters are down bad.
What's going on with the Scepters?
You know what? Quick side. They lost two or three nights ago on a goal that was offside, but the PWHL doesn't have offside reviews for goals, and it was an overtime, and so they lost. And if you go online, they're at least the puck is at least 3 feet into the zone on the overtime
winner.
They're going to get a win back tonight because they should not have lost that game. And then the Leafs, of course, we know, have had five bad periods in a row. So it's time to end that.
Yeah, I'm worried about your Scepters.
No, you got to
get back. In the win column. My bet's kind of lame. The Vegas Golden Knights are in Nashville.
You spelled Bunker wrong.
Ooh, that's tough.
Booker's dog of the day. Guys.
Got to clean that up. the Golden Knights are in Vegas or Nash Vegas tonight. -140 favorites, -139 favorites. I don't really get that. Like, Golden Knights are really good. Nashville's not. That seems a little bit off to me, but that's kind of a lame bet. So here's a long shot. Okay. 229-1. A future I place today. Cleveland Cavaliers to beat the Thunder in the final.
Wow.
Parlayed with the Ravens to beat the Lions in the Super Bowl.
Okay.
So two things I think that
are
very, very possible. And we're looking forward. And it's just a lottery ticket. Why play the lottery when you can just bet on sports and create lottery tickets for yourself?
Okay. I like that a lot. You'll have to send that one out because I already forgot it. It's Cavs and...
We'll do it in the break. Cavs over Thunder.
Yeah, I think that's pretty possible.
You'll never do this, though, because it's Ravens.
Yeah, you're right.
Versus Lions. Lions.
Speaking of my Bills, I'm getting myself there on Sunday.
Yeah, you're determined. Like,
that's my goal.
You didn't even have, like, the automatic people to go with.
No,
I was
almost going to go alone. I was talking to Logo.
I mean, that would be a little...
And then I thought, no, I can find one friend to go
with.
If
you get on a bus and go international travel alone to see a sports...
I got a couple... Of my beer league friends, I want to come.
Okay, so I'm happy
happening.
Because
I will
the solo
go.
Trip across the border to see the Bills.
Yeah, and then Monday I'll come in after my Bills beat your Ravens, and we'll have a great show. And if not, I'm not coming in.
I hope the bus ride back is miserable.
Okay, we're going to spend the next we're going to spend the next 30 minutes teeing up Leaf Stars on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. When we come back, Rich Peverly will join us, a former NHLer and Stars director of player personnel. They're very good at that. So he's got a good hand in this team drafting and developing quite well. So we'll take a quick break. That was the Fan Pregame brought to you by Betano. The game starts now.